Talk Shoe. Recorded live.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Talking Twilight Zone.
You open this door with the click of a mouse. Beyond it is a world of sound, thought, and opinion. In-depth discussions of television's greatest blending of science, superstition, imagination. And you're invited along. For the next 30 minutes, we'll be talking Twilight Zone.
Yes, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Talking Twilight Zone. And right now, I would like to turn this over to our main moderator, the one and only Bobby.
Thank you, Lynn, and welcome everyone to this week's edition of Talking Twilight Zone on this, the first day of spring 2010. Along with me today are my usual co-hosts, Ken and Lynn and Robert, and of course Kelly, who today is calling in from a very remote location. At the end of our last program, we all wished her well a few days before she departed for a 10-day vacation to Hawaii. Well, by all accounts, she and her husband had a great time and are on their way home today. But the timing is just a little off, so Kelly is calling in from the Honolulu airport as she waits to board their plane home. And we appreciate her taking this time out from being in paradise to do this show today. Today is bonus day on Talking Twilight Zone, two episodes on one program, A World of Difference, and Long Live Walter Jameson. Not because we want to hurry things along, but because most of us, not all of us, but most of us, consider these two episodes some of the lowest points of the series. And we just want to keep things interesting and keep everyone awake, including ourselves. So let's not delay any longer as I send it back to my always beautiful fiancé, Lynn, to start the show. Okay, honey, let's do it. The show, that is.
Thank you, sweetheart. I appreciate that, and I couldn't be more happy than I am right now to be marrying the most wonderful man in the world. But with that being said, let's get on with the show. And in this episode, A World of Difference, we see a man named Arthur Curtis, who seems to be living and loving his normal life. You see him in the beginning excitedly telling his secretary about his young daughter's birthday and how he can't wait to celebrate this birthday with his wife. He then leaves his office and hears a voice behind him yell, "Cut!" And suddenly he's on a movie set. And he is now a man named Jerry Reagan, a declining movie star playing the part of Arthur Curtis. His former sweet and loving wife is now a horrible, money-hungry shrew who wants nothing more than to see Jerry, a.k.a. Arthur, go down the tube so she can get all his money. Arthur actually tries to find his old wife and drives his horrible new wife's car to his old address, but to his dismay, there is no trace of his wife or stuck between, as they say, a rock and a hard place. In desperation, he rushes back to the studio just as they're about to tear down the set and end the production. He begs them to please send him back to his reality. Somehow they do, and he finds himself back in his comforting and serene office, but will he ever be the same? Who knows? I don't even know what happened in this episode, and I'm not sure I want to because it was a terrible episode. There was absolutely no indication of any kind as to why this happened to Arthur, and I'm not sure anyone even cared. Howard Duff was a very good actor and deserves a better role than this. David White played his agent, the guy who played Larry Kate on the sitcom Bewitched, but I have no idea what was going on here or why any of it was happening. There was no closure to this episode, and that's why I gave it a very poor rating. Not only a bad story, but very bad acting. So now I'm going to try to turn this over to Kelly, if I can get her back on here, and we don't have a lot of background noise.
Yeah, okay. So. Can you hear me?
Yeah. Robert's going to play a clip. I'm sorry, Robert.
And now, Mr. Serling.
You're looking at a tableau of reality. Things of substance, of physical material. A desk, a window, a light. These things exist and have dimension. Now, this is Arthur Curtis, age 36, who also is real. He has flesh and blood, muscle and mind. But in just a moment, we will see how thin a line separates that which we assume to be real with that manufactured inside of a mind.
Okay, Kelly.
Okay, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay, great. Yeah, on this particular episode, I really didn't think it was that bad. I guess the reason why I thought that it was an okay episode, and according to what Bob told me, he was looking at my review, I actually gave it a 4. I didn't remember liking it quite that much. But obviously, something touched me about it, and I just can't remember because it's been so long since I did that review. But what struck me about it was that it, when you think about the Twilight Zone, I think this is the type of thing that people think of when they're crossing into the Twilight Zone, that they're living their daily life like they normally would, and then all of a sudden everything changes and they're thrown into this alternate reality. And I think that was the crux of why I thought it was an okay episode. You know, how do you deal with the idea to all of a sudden find out that your existence, that your whole life as you know it, all of a sudden is nothing more than a part you're playing on a TV show or in a movie, and just basically how this poor guy deals with all of it, and to find out that his wife isn't who he thought she was. That's kind of an interesting concept too. The other concept too is that the idea too that your life is so horrible that you invent the other reality. Because you prefer it there better. That's the other thing too that I see in this episode. Otherwise, that's about all I can think of. I didn't think the acting was as bad as everybody else seems to think it is. But it's not really something that I thought was a horrible episode. Obviously, since I gave it a reasonably good rating. Ken, what do you think?
Well, one of the first things I want to say is I think technology in the year that we're living is amazing. I'm in California. Bob's in Washington. Kelly's in Hawaii. I believe Robert's in Ohio. Mm-hmm. And Lynn is in Pennsylvania. Isn't that amazing? We're all on the phone together.
Yes, it is.
Here we're talking, it's unfortunate, though, that we have to talk about, you know, episode 22, whatever the number is, A World of Nonsense, or A World of Difference, or whatever. I mean, I want to give everybody who's listening right now a warning. If the Twilight Zone marathon comes on, and this episode just happens to pop up, it's okay to leave the room, go get some snacks, go play with the dog, go throw the frisbee in the backyard, you know, have a couple of cold ones, and by the time you're done, hope that the next episode is much better than this awful soap opera, because that's all it was.
Well, I think you have to drink if you're watching this episode.
Yeah, but see, the whole Twilight Zone formula is missing. And let me tell you what happened to me once. I tried to make brownies once myself. And what I did was I got the brownie mix, I put it in the bowl, I put a little water and I stirred it around, and I put it in the oven for 30 minutes. And guess what? The brownies turned out to be a bomb. And the reason is I forgot to put the right ingredients in the brownie mix. You know, I forgot the 2 eggs. I forgot the vegetable oil. And I think this is what this episode did to us. It forgot the Twilight Zone ingredients. You don't just put together a script that makes no sense, and then you carry out the storyline to where the end scene makes no sense, and you're guessing, what did I just watch? You know, a guy is on the stage, and he doesn't know his name, he doesn't know the people, and at the end, he's on another stage. So I gave it a lousy rating, and I don't have much to say on this because it's just a dud.
Well, Ken, I only have one thing to say is, how did you miss the directions on the package of the brownie mix?
Well, poor Ken was up a mountain when he was trying to make the brownies. You know what says about elevated heights on the box?
I didn't read the directions. I just thought I could do it myself.
The real problem is that Ken forgot to put the pot in the brownies. That's the problem.
Okay, Robert, what do you think?
I mean, it's not as bad. I give it a 2. Let's be out front of what I give it for. Way I look at it, you know, the beginning, okay, was fine. The middle, I didn't really care about. And then the end was okay. What I really wanted to see out of this episode was the alternate world. Let's face it, he did go into an alternate world, and it kind of explains it that way as to where he's in reality and when he, you know, goes, you know, into the alternate world, and then when he goes in reality and the set's being taken down. Why do I want to see something that normally happens in my life, you know, or in other people's life, like a divorce or you know, bankruptcy or stuff like that? Why would I really want to see something that's maybe related to my life or to other people? I think that's why this is such a poor rating for other people. And it's not the acting. It's the story itself. I kind of compare it to Willoughby, which is one that we're going to have later on, where it's a lot better episode. And about a guy with the same situation, except for his is a little bit better than, unfortunately, this poor slob had. So poor Jerry is all I can say. So there's not much more I can add to this. So I'll just pass it over to Bobby. Bobby, you ever had this much problems than this guy had?
Well, I'll get to that in a second. Actually, I'm a little put off here because I found Ken's story about how he tried to make brownies a lot more frightening than this episode was.
Well, and the whole thing could have been avoided if he had just looked at the back of the box.
Thank you.
Next time, just go to the supermarket and buy Little Debbie brownies, and then they're already made. It's very simple.
Bobby, before you get started, can I just welcome Dave from England? He's here again.
Yeah,
hopefully he'll be able to, you get done with your review, I'd like to hear what Dave has to say. Because he said he liked the episode. So, Dave, hang on, and we'll get to you shortly.
Okay, I just want to say that, actually, I like the premise of this story. I find it an interesting and unusual premise. But, like too many Twilight Zone episodes, at least the bad ones, it's unrealized. It's a great premise, and I always say it's not enough just to have a great premise. A lot of us can think of things offhand that might make good stories, but if you can't do anything with it, and you can't flesh out the characters, and you can't make it interesting, then it doesn't prove anything. And that's the trouble with this story. It's unrealized. It doesn't really go anywhere. I wanted to see more. Well, if it would have been a better story, I would have wanted to see more. It's so lousy, though, I couldn't wait for it to end. But I like the premise, although I think that a lot of people could think of a better ending than there was. Rather than the ending that happened, I would have liked to have seen an ending that actually tells us that real life is actually just a movie, that none of what we're experiencing is real, in fact, that we only think that it is. And I say that because sometimes in real life, if something really bad is happening to you, or conversely, if something really good is happening to you, you might stop and think a minute and go, I wonder, is this really happening to me? Or is this a movie I'm watching, or what? I've had that happen many times, where I sat aside and went, boy, this is too awful to be for real. I must be watching a movie. And I would have liked to have seen the episode end with leaving the audience with the reality that, guess what? This is really, what we're doing every day is really a movie or a story for someone else's amusement, whether it's for God or whether it's for an alien race or whatever. And we only think we're living real life. That, I think, would have left the audience with something to ponder after it's over and go, oh, my God, I didn't realize that. I thought this was the real thing, but it's not. Instead, it's only about one man and one incident in his life. So it's hard to relate to him. I can't relate to him. I feel sorry for him in a way that this is happening, but it never really grabs me at all. As for it being Ken said, he advises people, if they're watching Twilight Zone Marathon or any of the episodes that are online, to avoid this like the plague, I would say it's pretty bad. I gave it a zero. But I would say that early in season one, Mr. Denton on Doomsday and the 16mm Shrine are even worse than this. So I would say stay away from those before you even come here. But overall, I gave it a zero, and it's just a shame. A nice and interesting and unusual premise.
I gave it a poor, but it's only because I didn't feel it had any closure to it.
No,
I didn't feel it had any closure. You never knew why this happened to him.
No.
So, all right.
And you know what? You also don't know whether he's going to go back to being that way or not. Is this a one-time thing, or will it happen over and over again?
Exactly. And it didn't seem like in the beginning that he was unhappy in his life. He seemed very happy with his wife, his daughter, everything. Everything seemed very happy for him. And all of a sudden, he's in this horrible life, and you don't know why, and you didn't get any closure, and then he goes back to his normal life. But what was wrong with his first life? His first life was fine.
Don't you think there's a possibility that when he went home that it happened all over again?
I'm not sure
it's a one-time thing. So that might have been a more interesting ending, too, that he thinks he's out of it, only to get home and realize that he's back in it again.
Exactly.
That episode, as it is, it just ends there. It feels like it ends simply because 30 minutes is up and it's time for the episode to end.
That's right.
There's more to say, but nobody really has the time to say it. All right,
now,
well, if nobody else has anything else to add...
Dave, do you have anything to say about this episode?
Yeah, I'm bursting to get in here. Bursting.
I know you're bursting to get in here.
I can't believe... Well, I mean, obviously everybody wants their opinion, but I thought it was a pretty good episode. And that point you said about you couldn't understand him, he had a happy wife, and why was he not happy? That was the wife he was trying to get back to. It was that happy life he was trying to get back into. It was the world that we thought was real, where he had the wife that was trying to leech him for money, and agents were harassing him and so on. And to me... I might have missed it very early on because I came in a few minutes after you started, but the answer to the whole plot came there. Admittedly, it's only on the camera for about 5 seconds, but they show a close-up of the script, and the script clearly says the film that they were making was called The Private World of Arthur Curtis. And that was the whole nub of the story. He had retreated into that private world. It's not a question of us relating to it. That was a world, whether you take the point that it was his imagination and he was fleeing back into his imagination, or whether that really was the real world for him and our world is the fiction, that's up for the viewer to make their mind. But I thought that was really great. And that idea has been exploited quite a number of years later by a British writer who fortunately died a few years ago, called Roald Dahl. He wrote fantastic stories, including Fantastic Mr. Fox, which was made into a film. He had a TV series, and that was called A Twist in the Tale, which was very much in the mould and took homage to The Twilight Zone. And basically, that was what I thought this story was. Admittedly, it was drawn out, and the payoff was maybe to some people minimal, but there was a payoff. It was explained. It was the close-up of the script, The Private World of Arthur Curtis.
I have a question for you. What numerical rating would you give to this, and how in the world do I get your accent?
I know. Isn't that accent cool? Bobby and I are getting married, by the way, Dave. Bobby and I are engaged.
Excellent.
Yes.
Congratulations.
But I'm telling you, if you keep talking with that accent, I might tell him to get lost, and I might come over to you. That accent is absolutely... Oh.
So what numerical rating would you give it between 0 and 5?
I would have said a 4, but in actual fact, there are a lot of the ones of the episodes I really need to rewatch, and there are better episodes. In fact, the second one you're going to talk about, I probably liked slightly more. So let's say 3.5 for this one.
Okay, all right.
Oh, all right, okay. So you're not giving it an excellent or a really great, but you're giving it a good. You're giving it a good, yeah.
Yeah, I thought the lead actor, I thought he...
Howard
the
Duff.
Express, yeah, Howard Duff. That's, thank you for that. I thought he got the actual, panic stricken, the worry. I thought he acted that extremely well. I mean, from going to a set. I mean, actually, when that right early on when we were seeing him in the office, and then they pan and they break down that fourth wall, I was actually quite surprised that he was in a set.
Did you think that maybe it was a little bit overacted though? Howard Duff was a little
I think the person who played his wife overacted somewhat.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
And the other things, but no, the panic and harassment. Of course, again, and I will always say this as a UK viewer to programmes that are made where there are advert breaks in it. Some cases the actor has to overact. Because he will say something like, oh no, you're going to leave me. And then, of course, there would have been an advert break, and then he has to then say after the advert break, so, oh, you are going to leave me then. You know, so he has to almost say everything twice to bookend the advert break, which, unfortunately, it's an unfortunate thing for the actors, where in the UK, if a series is 30 minutes long, you know, not 23 minutes for half an hour, but half an hour long, he's got more time to develop the character, and he hasn't got to repeat those same, what I would call exposition, where he's got to say the thing, and then he's got to say it again differently to remind you. Like, they're driving along in the car, and they stop, and they say, you know, he says to her, I'm not who you think I am. And then there's obviously an advert break, and he comes back, but I'm trying to tell you, I'm not who you think I am. And the only reason for that is there was a break in between.
And that's why you had the white guys with the coats and the ambulance coming back in. Did you play it?
Has everybody said everything this one?
Let us move on. But before I do that, let me do a sneak preview for our next show. 2 weeks from today, there will be pretty much universal acclaim for one of the best episodes of the entire series. People Are Alike All Over with Roddy McDowall, 2 weeks from today on Talking Twilight Zone. Now let's move on to our second episode before the plane leaves with Al Kelly. Let's send it back to Lynn. Lynn?
Okay. Robert, do you have a clip for Long Live Walter Jameson?
And now, Mr. Serling.
You're looking at Act One, Scene One of a nightmare. One not restricted to witching hours and dark, rain-swept nights. Professor Walter Jameson, popular beyond words, who talks of the past as if it were the present, who conjures up the dead as if they were alive. In the view of this man, Professor Samuel Kitteridge, Walter Jameson has access to knowledge that couldn't come out of a volume of history, but rather from a book on black magic, which is to say that this nightmare begins at noon.
Okay, that was a little bit different, a little better than A World of Difference, but not much by much, in my opinion. Here's a man named, as stated, Walter Jameson, and he's currently a history teacher at a prominent university. He has so much knowledge of the past history that it finally catches the attention of a colleague and future father-in-law of his who teaches at the same college named Samuel Kitteridge. Now, Kitteridge has his suspicions that something is just not right about Walter Jameson. He invites him to dinner at his home one night and shows him a history book with photos of men during the Civil War. Astoundingly, one of the men in the photo is identical to Jameson and also wearing a ring that Jameson is wearing at the very same time on the very same day. It seems that Jameson has lived through much of ancient history. As they say, the jig is up, and Jameson has to come clean. He tells Kitteridge that he has to, he tells Kitteridge that he's been alive for over 2,000 years. Even he's met some of the ancient philosophers, has married many times, and has fathered many children due to a payment he made 2,000 years ago in exchange for immortality. He made this payment to an alchemist who gave him immortality. He says he now regrets it, but cannot change it. Kitteridge refuses to let him marry his daughter, knowing what he now knows. However, Kittredge's daughter loves Jameson and knows nothing about this. Jameson says he still intends to marry her and will do so that night. He heads back to his home right across the street from Kittredge's to pack his bags, but unbeknownst to Jameson or anyone else, one of the women he left and scorned many years ago was waiting for him outside of his house, a very old woman, and walked in to tell him that he had done what he had done to her. He would not allow, she would not allow him to do, continue to do, to other women and other people in his life. And she would not allow him to do the same things. Now, she was a very old woman at this point. She saw a gun that Jameson owned sitting on his desk. She picked it up and shot him dead. Right after that, Jameson's face began to change from a young man into an older man until he was nothing but a pile of dust on the floor. Kittredge and his daughter heard the shot, came running in, and saw nothing but his clothes and the dust in the form of a man on the floor. They seemed distraught, but just left the scene. That was it. Okay, I'll say one good thing for this episode. The end scene where he turns to dust, that was excellent. That was excellent camera work. However, the rest of the episode stunk. He said to Kittredge at one point that he didn't want to live forever and watch all of his friends, family, and loved ones die. Well, maybe this is one of those rare occasions when suicide is actually acceptable. However, the part of this episode that most bothered me was when his fiance walked into his house, saw his clothes lying there, and a pile of dust in the shape of a man, and she did not get hysterical. What was that all about? This is the man she intended to marry. If I walked into Bobby's apartment and saw him laying in a pile of dust, I'd be in a hospital room or a mental ward. This episode was pretty lame, and that's why I also gave this one a pretty poor rating. I mean, come on. So, Kelly, are you still there?
Are you turning it over to me?
And yep, I sure am.
Okay. I just didn't hear you say anything. So, okay. Yeah, I actually liked this episode, and I did have one or two problems with it, and my problems were simply that if he actually could be killed, it seemed really weird to me that in 2,000 years he never caught the bubonic plague or smallpox or one of those types of diseases that could kill, that could wipe out large portions of the population in a matter of weeks.
He
somehow managed to avoid getting sick. He served in wars. I mean, he served in the Civil War, and he somehow managed to never get killed, much less even wounded. That struck me as a little odd. And then all of a sudden, here we are 2,000 years later, a woman that he spurned because she got old shows up one night and just shoots him dead right through the heart. Now, I would say that was poetic justice. I mean, I gave the woman kudos for not sitting back and playing a victim. She certainly had every right to be mad at him. And certainly, the other thing I liked about her was that she wasn't going to let him just keep doing this to everybody else. I mean, she said she saw the engagement announcement in the paper. And she said, I'm not going to let you do to her what you did to me. And she just said, this has got to end. And so she ended it. And very interesting ending there. I mean, she just kind of calmly walks out. Nobody suspects that she shot anybody. And obviously she's going to get away with because there's no body. So it's hard to prosecute a crime without a body. But the one thing about the daughter at the end when she came in, I believe the reason why she initially, Lynn, you were saying that you thought that she should have freaked out or something. I think the reason why she didn't really freak out too much was because she said, well, where is he? And her father said, didn't he say something like he just left?
Yeah.
I got the impression that the implication with her was that he just up and left her. Now, granted, you think she would still be a little more upset if her boyfriend goes and leaves her. But I don't think it really clicked with her that, that he was actually dead at that point. I kind of got the impression the father was going to take her home and explain it to her. So I really didn't have too much of a problem with the episode. I liked it. I've always liked Kevin McCarthy as an actor. And so whenever I see him in stuff, I, you know, I tend to take more notice. You know,
he's a very good actor.
So what did you think, Ken?
Sorry, but I'm going to have to give a lousy rating on this one because I do not like soap operas. And I'll tell you the reason why. We've talked about it in the Fugitive series and also in this series. Whenever a soap opera comes on, I turn it off. And I'll tell you why. It's because when I was growing up in the 60s, some days I was sick, so I couldn't go to school, so I was forced to stay home. And during the day, we had a black and white TV, and I was in Chicago, and it was raining, so I couldn't go outside. So I had to watch the black and white TV, and wouldn't you know it, at 12 noon, Days of Our Lives came on, and then As the World Turns, and The Guiding Light, and I watched those soap operas. And so I was forced to watch those episodes of the soap operas where, what do you have? You have a guy in the household who cheats on his spouse, and then the spouse turns around and cheats on him, and then the mother and the father find out, and then the children find out, and then somebody gets mad at somebody else, and you just go round and round in circles, and would you believe 50 years later, they're still having the same scenario play out today. Now, in this Twilight Zone episode, Long Live Walter Jameson, what is he doing? He's got a pretty girl there in the living room, and she's just a bimbo. She just falls in love with this guy, doesn't ask any questions, doesn't listen to any advice, and she wants to marry this guy. And then the end scene was horrible. And I want to tell all the people who were playing Frisbee in the backyard and who missed The World of Difference, I want you to also miss this episode, but then come back toward the epilogue where the guy is shot and turns to dust. That was pretty cool, just to see the dust on the floor.
Oh, that was a great scene. That was a great scene.
Yeah,
that was good.
You know what? I still, though, we're going to give a lousy rating because the whole thing was horrible. I mean, you guys who liked it, you're going to have to explain to me how you can sit through this and watch this. If this guy is 2,000 years old, I want to know the backstory. You know what they should have done in this episode? Have a flashback. Okay, mm-hmm. If 2,000 years ago, that's the Roman Empire, right? That's the time of Christ.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe this guy has an artifact. Or maybe there's a flashback scene where they just show the Roman Empire a little bit. If he lived in the Civil War, show us a picture of Abraham Lincoln that he kept or something. He had a
maybe
photograph.
Maybe he was hanging out with Jesus.
Yeah, and hey, some other important things happened in the last 2,000 years. Actually, if he's in America now, in the present day, 500 years ago, America wasn't discovered, right? So this is an empty land. So he must have been living in the Middle East back then. So tell us a story about what you were doing there and how did you come over to the new land and all that. That would have been a much more interesting episode, just some mini flashbacks. And then at the end, instead of this old lady coming and shooting the guy, you know, just have it end where he's reversing himself. He goes back to a little boy, and then eventually he's a little baby, and maybe that twist would have worked better. But just to be shot and then go to dust, pretty bad. Sorry, guys. I'm pretty picky. And I'm pretty peculiar. You've got to entertain me better than that. And so I guess the whole motto of this story is be careful of former spouses. They may blow you away. And I want to ask everybody who's married out there, and I want to ask my wife, if she found out I was 2,000 years old, would she shoot me to death? And
probably. Probably.
And any spouses out there, would you shoot your other spouse to death if you knew they were 2,000?
She's probably got enough reasons right now to shoot you.
I agree.
All right, Robert, you got to save me. And you've got to really be specific, Robert. You got to say why this episode is good. Just
okay,
don't
Robert, Ken, it depends on whether or not you burned your wife. I mean, remember, the implication in this episode was that he dumped his ex-wife because she got old and he didn't. So that's
the
key.
That's true. Kelly, before we go to Robert, how much longer before you have to board your plane?
Actually, I was just going to say I should get off the phone here because they are starting to board and I expect our row to be called here at any moment. So I'm going to say aloha to you all and I'll see you on the mainland.
Have a safe
thank you, Kelly.
See you later.
Aloha.
Bye-bye.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Aloha. I'll hear from you when you get back.
Bye.
Robert, like I said, don't give me generalities. You got to say why the story works.
Okay, Ken,
okay?
So you read my review, right?
Yes, I did.
Okay, so this is why you're stressing it to me like this. And I'll try to explain. I gave this a 3 because I gave this a far better rating than the previous one. And here is why. Because this story does have elements into the possibility of what this story could have been. And as I reviewed this, I kind of called it either a vampire story or Dorian Gray was how I titled my review. They decided, now, even though that Ross Sterling didn't write this story, Ross Sterling has to have input into his own because he created the series. And I felt the decision that he probably suggested to the writer of the story was, well...
That was Charles Beaumont, wasn't it?
Right.
Charles Beaumont? Yeah, Charles Beaumont. Okay.
Why don't you try this and why don't you try that? I mean, looking at the story, it's basically a story about the curse of immortality. It's basically what it comes down to. Immortality is a curse, which is brought up years down the road in other shows. Highlander, for example, immortality in that, or even Doctor Who, where when the Doctor dies, this regenerates into somebody else. The Doctor himself even said that it's kind of a curse where other people die and he can't live their life. This is the situation with Walter Jameson. Now, I do agree that the bullet was kind of stupid because if you live 2,000 years, how can you survive one God shot when through this whole time there had to have been other things that happened to you in your life? I think he did mention he came near, but he never fully died, but it had to be an ex-wife or girlfriend to put him out. But, like I said, here again, this would have been wonderful if it would have been changed to a vampire story. It has all the elements, the immortality, the dusting at the end. I wish they would have went in that direction. Instead, to go into a Dorian Gray minus the deal with the devil with the picture getting old and instead of him type situation. But, Ken, I feel this story does have some merit to it. Yes, there is some boring parts to here and there. I do agree with that. That's why I only give it a 3. But by far, I wish they would have took this story, and I know it's only 25 minutes. I wish they would have went in, one or the other direction, or at least the vampire. This would have been a really great vampire story. But unfortunately, you get what you get. So did I kind of justify that for you, Ken?
Not really.
Okay. Hey, I tried. I put my thing out there and I give it to you. But I'll pass it over to Bobby because I don't have no more. So, Bobby, just be careful of piles of dust in the corner of the room. You never know who it might be.
Yeah.
I won't shoot you, honey. I swear to God I won't shoot you.
I tell you, I got to stop going last on this show because everybody said everything I was going to say.
Dave's after you, so.
Ken really stole my thunder because the story he told about being sick as a child and watching soap operas is my exact story, except it was in the 50s, not the 60s. And I think, Ken, you left out one soap opera. How about Search for Tomorrow? Wasn't that all when you were... I was home, too, when I was sick, and I was a sickly kid. So I was about 6 years old, and I could tell you... I could bring you up to date on any soap opera immediately. Yes, that's true. Now, as far as it comes to this episode is concerned, I have to agree. One thing I have to agree with Robert about is that it doesn't make any sense that a man could live for 2,000 years and somebody could blow him away so easily with a gun. I mean, I would assume that if you can live 2,000 years, you're impervious to diseases, that bullets will jump off of you just like they did when you tried to shoot Superman, and that you couldn't be killed. So how is it all of a sudden, after 2,000 years, you're going to pick up a gun and blow him away? You must have been the luckiest man in the world to have survived all that time. And yeah, and I agree with Ken. If you're going to do a story like this, not that I want to extend this story to be any longer, don't get me wrong, but this is the kind of story that should have been in the season where The Twilight Zone went, regrettably, in my opinion, to an hour-long format. Because there's more to be told here, and it's just the story ends, and that's it. I mean, if it had been longer, heaven forbid, if it had been longer, they could have shown what Ken is suggesting. What has he seen in the past? Why can't we get some flashbacks to when he saw history being made? And can he tell everybody if the things that we are hearing, if the things in the history books are true? I mean, we take it at face value, but they've gone through generations. This happened, this happened, this happened, this happened. But we never have a person who was actually there to say, look, I'm telling you, that's exactly how it happened. I ought to know. I was there. But he was there, but it just goes right out the window. Nobody knows anything because the story, instead of being a story about a man who lived in other centuries, it's a story about a man who got away with it, and now somebody finds out about it. That's the wrong way to go. You got a great premise here, but you're taking it in the wrong direction. I don't care that some former girlfriend or wife or whatever blows him away because she's really PO'd at him over it. What I care about, I want to know what he did in his prior life. They completely leave that behind. You got to be kidding me. You left the best part of the story behind to go to, Ken is right, it's a soap opera. It's basically just a soap opera. What a tragedy. Now, the only other thing I can say about this ridiculous story in conclusion is that I disagree with Robert. I think that it would be a great idea to be able to live 2,000 years, providing you don't have to sit and watch this story ever again. And that's all I have to say about it.
Well, Bobby, I want to say that I understand the ending, which is basically what they're trying to stress across, that what really killed him was the love that she had for him. Maybe the love is what broke the curse. I don't know. But
I don't know either.
Yeah,
I don't know either.
If they could have stretched it out, like you said, it maybe do some flashbacks. I do agree with Ken on that spot about the flashback. Yeah, they needed to do that. But here again, you're talking about a 25-minute show. You're limited by what you can do on it.
Right,
I just felt that they should have went in one or the other direction.
Put it in the season where they did the hour-long shows. I don't like almost any of them in that season, but put it there. If you want to extend the series to an hour, which I always think is a bad idea, and we'll get to that later, I mean, then put a story in there that needs an hour. This is one of them. This is one of the stories that needs an hour. Because...
Well,
okay, go
Dave,
ahead,
Dave from England, my darling Dave from England, has, yes, my Dave. He,
wait a minute, I'm your darling. I'm your darling.
I'm
remember
your darling, but I also love it. Dave compared this to Peyton Place.
Oh,
No. I was saying that when he was watching the soaps, was that the time of Peyton Place? I can't remember whether that was in
now,
the 60s
Peyton
or
Place
the 70s.
Peyton Place was the first prime time soap opera. Ken and I were home from school during the day. In my house, my sister and my mother were watching soap operas, and I had no choice because the Mickey Mouse Club wasn't on that early in the day.
what do you think, Dave? What do you think about that?
Well,
here, come
like
save
it.
Us here, Dave.
But first of all, I think Robert said some things that I definitely agree with. And in some ways, this story is a little bit of a flip side to what I said earlier when I said that the trouble is about the shortness of the episode. And I think Robert just mentioned it there again. The fact that they couldn't go into all his past life, they just simply couldn't. Unless, of course, as was said, they've given it an hour airing. But in some ways, actually, this is one of those stories where the time limit might well have helped, in as much as there's no room for any padding. They basically cut to what I think Robert highlighted was the main thing. It was about the curse of immortality. Now, I do think they should have clarified some things. For instance, when he talked about the time that he had originally been given this potion and been made, long-lived immortal. It wasn't clear, but my interpretation was, especially going with that picture of him from the Civil War, was that in actual fact he was around the age of 50 when he first was made immortal. So he was, in actual fact, in 2,000 years, he wasn't a 20-year-old man who now looks 50, but he was 50 when he was made immortal. He still looks the same age. And to me, that probably explains some way towards the fact that he didn't go down with any diseases or any illnesses, in as much as the cells of his body must have been replacing all that time, otherwise his body would have generally aged, and he would have been a 2,000-year-old man who looked extremely aged, a little bit like the Benjamin Button story, and really old like that.
Or
so,
the picture of Dorian Gray.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So I'm assuming that things that happened slowly to his body, he would have had an absolutely fantastic, biological resistance to illnesses. But a sudden violent thing, and quite rightly you say he was in a civil war, one would have thought he would have met some fate. But I think basically the death at the end, two things it served. One, it brought the story to an apt and quick conclusion. But secondly, you almost felt that this man was accepting it. He said to the father, every night he went back to his house, every night he put the gun to their head. He just didn't have the courage to end his life. And in some ways, he almost welcomed this finality. So
he did to the end, yeah, when it finally occurred to him what was happening.
Yeah, and I think the quote that Robert was searching for about Doctor Who was, he says to the people who are not long-lived, you can spend the rest of your life with me, but I can't spend the rest of my life with you, because of course
right,
you would outlive them.
That was a quote from School Reunion. I was watching that yesterday.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
It's a shame that Dr. Jack Kevorkian wasn't around at that time.
Yeah. You know, the only way the story works for me is that you change the character of Walter Jameson, and you replace the character with Susan Oliver, and you say, long live Susan Oliver, 2,000 years, I'll give this a classic rating any day.
I was waiting for you to say Agnes Moorehead, Ken, your favorite actor.
Agnes Moorehead. I'm the only man I've ever known that says that Agnes Moorehead was so gorgeous. God. I found pitbulls that were better looking than Agnes Moorehead.
Well, actually, she was trying to look her back in the 30s and 40s in the old movies. She looked pretty good back then.
But wouldn't the story, wouldn't it have been incredible just to see a woman who could live 2,000 years and still keep that radiant beauty?
Well, what about your wife? What if Carolyn lives 2,000 years?
Carolyn's only 1,500 years old.
I don't know. The male-dominated scripts are really bothering me. We can get into that later, but why not use a woman in this part? Why a man?
I don't know.
Well, I'll tell you something. We could use Agnes Moorehead because she always looked about 1,500 years old.
You had to cast the Bewitch in there. I mean, you had the guy to play Darren. You had one with Samantha. You had the one with Samantha's mother. You have the guy that played Larry Tate in this one. So, I mean, you know.
Yeah. You could argue as well that the woman.
All the people from Bewitched, all the mm-hmm. people from the sitcom Bewitched have been in Twilight Zone episodes. Elizabeth Montgomery, Dick York, Agnes Moorehead, Larry Tate.
That's David White.
David White, yeah.
And David White.
Only one who hasn't was Dick Sargent because, of course he wasn't around at that time. But, and believe it or not, every single one of them, from what I've read, and I could be wrong about this, but every single one of them was homosexual.
Oh, wow.
Yes. Elizabeth Montgomery, Agnes Moorehead, Dick York, Dick Sargent. I don't know about David White. No,
I don't know.
Lynn, on what I have read.
Lynn, you were talking about accents. How about the act Rod Serling? I mean, that deep voice.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
I mean, his voice just
his
makes
voice
the whole series.
His voice enough to send you to melt you into
yeah.
Oh, my God.
I wish I could just say his voice in a couple sentences. That would be amazing.
Lynn, we're getting off on a tangent about other things here, so let's wrap this up. Let's show up.
Well, I just want to say one last thing. Sweetheart, other than your voice, Rod Serling's voice is
I'm sure everybody wants to hear that. Let me just say one last thing about this episode, and then we'll wrap this up. The only real danger in this rather boring episode is that the viewer will turn to dust by the time it's over. Other than that, I think it's defensible. Lynn, thanks to everybody, and thanks to Kelly. Lynn, let's wrap it up until next time when we do a much better episode.
Oh, yes, definitely. And the next episode will be a better one. People are like all over, and that'll be coming 2 weeks from now. So we will wrap this up for now, and thanks to everyone who was here today. And here we go.